Awesome. So we're back. This is the Windows 8 UX Design Jumpstart. And in this next session, we're going to talk about UI elements. So we're going to talk about content and controls. So in the last session, we talked about laying out on the grid and using a type ramp. So having a nice structure to your app, a nice skeleton to your app, having an information architecture using that typography, a subset of weights and fonts to kind of communicate that infrastructure or that hierarchy.
And we emphasize letting the content be your guide, using the content to create a system of navigation, really.
Right. And so we know now how to lay things out. Now let's talk about what there is to lay out. So content as far as like images and text or controls for interactions, like controls for a rating or a dropdown or
those have to go somewhere.
Yeah, they have to go somewhere. So how do we do that to make a great Windows 8 app design? So in the first couple of sessions, we talked a lot about content before Chrome, and we talked about removing distractions to really enhance discoverability. But there's a question about where does all that Chrome go? Where do those features go? Like,
there
the search bar.
And
the settings button and stuff like that. How do I provide those same features? Because they're important features. We just want to provide them in such a way that they don't obscure your core scenarios, your best at statement, the content and controls that provide your features.
And you want to do it predictably so that people don't have to hunt and find where you've put them off screen.
Right. And some of that you're going to get from just Windows 8 and how you use Windows 8, and others they're going to get from the way you structure content and what you put on the page. So let's just do a quick demo with Contoso Cookbook. I'm going to go ahead and grab Contoso Cookbook. And again, using what we know from the layout section, we had talked about how we laid out content into different sections like featured and this positive space between featured and what's new to show that those two things are different sections of our content. Mm-hmm. And then the content within the featured section, the margins that we have between them or the negative space we have between them shows that, hey, they're somehow related. These are the featured recipes. And for a lot of these things, we put the controls directly on the surface, right? So, an image control for the person and for the recipe and so on. In some instances, we put controls directly within the content. So, for example, within what's new, here's a new invite from Carrie, a friend invite coming from Carrie to tell me that she wants to be my friend, right? And if I tap on the image, it takes me to Carrie's page where I can learn more about her and what kind of food she likes and so on and decide whether I want to be her friend. But one of the things that we wanted to do, since it's a core scenario to accept or reject friend invites, was to put the controls for doing so right there on the content or on the invite itself. So I could just go ahead and tap on it and accept that friend invite, right?
Yeah, that's a key point of that tile.
Exactly. Versus in other instances, if I had something like, let's say that I wanted to mark one of these recipes as a favorite. I could put, a button on the tomato sauce recipe for marketing as a favorite, and maybe put another button on it for navigating to it.
Yep.
And then maybe another button for, and it would kind of add up to the point where all these buttons for all these interactions would really just obscure the content.
Right.
In this case, the recipe. So for those kinds of things, what we want to do is we want to use selection as a way to surface those commands. So for example, recipes can be marked as favorites and they can be pinned to the start screen. And just using a Windows 8 gesture, the cross swipe for selection, gives me the ability to add commands to that content in a contextual way. So I don't have to look at them all the time. They're not cluttering up the screen, cluttering up the beautiful photos that we have and the information about the rating and the time to prepare. But they're always there available to me. So if I want to make this a favorite recipe, I just select it and tap on the button, and then you can see the ribbon comes out to mark that as a favorite.
And notice as soon as you selected it, that app bar popped up.
Yep.
Windows 8 knows that if you select something like that and it has an action associated with it, then you are intending for that app bar to pop out, and so that automatically happens.
Right. So I can move those kinds of commands to be contextual and move them onto an app bar. And an app bar is a transient UI that is shown either when the user selects an item like I've done here, or for general app bars around the app like here. Within Contoso Cookbook, we wanted a user to be able to add a recipe from anywhere within the app. So we added that to the app bar, so when you right-click or swipe up from the bottom of the screen to see the global app bar, you would see this add recipe button that you could tap on and go ahead and add one of your own recipes to a Contoso cookbook, right? But you'll also notice that there's no search bar, there's no settings button for configuring settings, there's no little icons for each of the recipes to share them and stuff like that, because all of that's contextual, right? So if I go into a recipe like Steam Bun Baus, right, and wanted to share that, I can just go ahead and grab the share contract, right? And that feature is expected by users behind the share contract, and it provides, it kind of frees up some pixels for me to kind of highlight, the great content that I have within my app. Same thing with search. You know, I build that into the charm. We'll talk about that tomorrow, first thing when we do the contracts and extension sessions. But just an example of some of the things that maybe you're used to, you know, designing onto the command surface, that with Windows 8, you can pull those off and move them, you know, to app bars or move them to the charms bar and free up more pixels for content and core controls.
Exactly.
Another great example, for writing reviews here, rather than having, me swipe up from the bottom and, have a review button, for how many whisks or how many stars I want to give the review. I just put this right on the surface so the user can just go ahead and tap on it and say how many, how many whisks. I think this is 4 out of 5 whisks. I think it's great, and I'll just go ahead and I've got, writing a review is a core scenario, so we just leave that just right on the page here. So I'm just tapping on little text controls to say, I love Baus. And I won't make you guys watch me type all day. But
yeah, we went through several scenarios for how to put these ratings on screen. This is one of those exercises that we really had a lot of great ideas for, and all of them were legitimate.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the reason those ratings are there is for you to contribute to the conversation and for you to understand how other people feel about the recipe.
Right.
And so we felt like the user's input was a key scenario, and so that needed to go on screen. And it also was a great way to put the user's photo right there on screen to encourage them to associate a rating with their name already.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of advantages to putting it where we did.
Right, right. So another example here is I have an app bar here where I have core commands for a recipe. So this app bar is specific to this particular recipe, so like being able to favorite it and pin it. Before, when I was looking at a group of recipes, it was contextual that I'd select one and the app bar would show the contextual commands for that content, or in this case, that recipe. But here I'm in the recipe, so I can just go ahead and swipe up and I can see that those commands all the time because I am on that recipe page.
Yeah, and I think favoriting a recipe is one of those items that you want to really be able to do from anywhere.
Yeah.
And so from the hub, you can select that recipe and favorite it.
Right.
Whereas, adding a photo to a recipe doesn't make a whole lot of sense from the hub.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So when you get to the recipe detail, you have that option.
Exactly. Great example. Okay, so let's go back into the slides and start taking a look at this in a little bit more depth. So one of the first things that we need to talk about when we're talking about UI elements is commanding surfaces, or what's the canvas available to me as a designer for placing controls and content on a page or in my app. And it's a little bit different from just having a web page and everything goes on the web page, because again, we do want to highlight the core scenarios as much as possible. And there's some different transient UIs that I can leverage to make the core scenarios live on the canvas, but provide those features either in an on-demand or a contextual way, so users kind of see very, very clearly the content and the features of your app, but always have that feeling of confidence that they're going to have access to the different commands to interact with it wherever possible. So let's look at some of these commanding surfaces as an example. So the first is just putting things on the canvas or putting things on the page. And you want to put core content and controls directly on the page. And again, that's just gives users, it just surfaces that content. Here's the picture of the recipe or here's a rating control that shows the average rating of that recipe. Put that on the page. Surface that as your core scenario. when the reviews was another great example of, you know, rather than just a consumption, like consuming like the rating of the image, being able to just go ahead and interact with those controls to enter my own rating and enter my own review directly on the page there, rather than, you know, having them go to a different page or have to select something. It's so core. Just build it seamlessly into the experience. When users are consuming content, they're going to want to consume content either by tapping, like the primary action, like tap on a recipe to navigate to it, or panning to slide amongst and pan amongst all the recipes, like in a cuisine pack, or by selecting. And I think that's a great example of something that's different about Windows 8 that's very intuitive to the Windows 8 user as soon as they start interacting with, you know, say, the start screen or the built-in apps. They're going to select a tile. They're going to see actions with that tile. And it's just a really great experience versus putting all of those actions as buttons and controls.
Exactly.
So, you know, I can select a tile, I can change a tile from small to large and all that. If I had all those buttons on each of the tiles, they'd be very cluttered and they wouldn't be very clear.
Exactly.
So leverage direct manipulation or contextual commands instead of putting a lot of Chrome and a lot of controls on the screen. And again, if we go back to just the start screen, you know, I can select these controls just to our cross swipe and see a bunch of commands with them that I don't have to litter on each individual tile. And they can be contextual on whether I have, you know, multiple items or a single item selected. And it's just really, really powerful. Again, I don't have to have a uninstall or turn live tile off button on every single tile.
Exactly.
And it applies to the start screen. It's going to apply to your app. So the next thing is an app bar. So we had talked about moving those contextual or non-core commands off of the canvas and make them based on selection. And what you can do is you can actually move those commands to an app bar. And an app bar can be global to the page, you know, so the commands that you show all the time, or they can be based on selection. So if I select a recipe to say whether I want to pin it or I want to mark it as a favorite. And these app bars are something that Windows 8 users are just going to know and expect in every single app. The app bar you actually show just like you do on the start screen just by dragging up from the top. Right, if you want to show it globally, or based on selection, as we had mentioned. Right, and once users start interacting with the start screen, they'll know how to do that.
Exactly. It's one of the key behaviors that users learn immediately upon using Windows 8.
Exactly. And it's based on a light dismiss. So users know, if we go back to even the Contoso Cookbook app, I swipe up from the bottom to show the app bar. If I don't, if I decide that, no, I didn't want to pin it or whatever, I can just tap anywhere else on the screen and it goes ahead and goes away. So it's kind of this confidence thing that users just know that those app bars live, you know, underneath or at the top of the screen and they can just grab that one pixel or right click with the mouse or do Windows Z to grab those commands. Okay. Another temporary UI is a flyout. So being able to have a control canvas that's transient, that's only showed based on, you know, the selection of a command or tapping on an app bar button or something along those lines. And it's great for putting a bunch of controls to collect information or provide a warning or confirm an action for a user. And again, this is a canvas, so you can put any of the controls that are built into the SDK or controls, the custom controls that you create, on these transient services and just display them based on the user a user action.
Yep.
Oops. Excuse me. So the next is context menus. So context menus are, again, command menus that could be applied to objects or applied to text. But these can only have textual commands. So if you think about like selecting text and having a copy, copy-paste menu is a great example. Or having here another example of having, tapping on a link and being able to copy it or open it in a new tab. So context menus, again, transient UI. You can move those commands off of the surface and provide them based on, you know, like a tap and hold on some text. These menu commands can have up to 5 commands. If you need more than that, maybe think about a flyout, maybe for a more sophisticated UI.
Yeah, and we use some of that for our sorting commands in Contoso Cookbook.
Absolutely. So the next is message dialogues. So if there's ever a situation where you require user interaction. So, you know, in that particular user flow, you can't go any further without making a decision, or you want the user to make a decision. That's where you'd want to use a message dialog. And this dims the underlying window and gives you a couple of options, like here, you know, would you like to report this problem? You choose whether you report the problem or no thanks. And the user has to make a selection, versus a flyout can just be shown and it's light dismissed, so you can just tap anywhere on the screen and it's just going to go away.
So these would be high consequence
actions. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, a flyout could be something used for...
sorting, like, for instance, when we're sorting recipes, if you want to go alphabetically or by rating, that sort of thing.
Right, but if it's more urgent, you definitely want to use a message dialog. Mm-hmm.
If you're deleting your account, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, transferring all your money from your bank account to my bank account.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's probably what
please confirm.
Yeah, please confirm. And then next, you're going to see a lot of these scenarios that where we would see a lot of, you know, UI Chrome move to the charm. So rather than having, you know, a search text box on every single page, implement the search charm and do it in an app-specific way. So users, you know, they're going to be used to just grabbing, you know, this right... pixel here and showing the charms bar and tapping on search. So implement the feature behind that search bar rather than placing it directly on the canvas and littering the canvas. And we'll talk about the design decisions and stuff that you need to make for designing these experiences tomorrow. But just wanted to mention it just so people know, hey, I know where that feature is going to go. It's not, it doesn't necessarily have to go on the canvas. I want to put that you know, behind the charms bar and build the scenario and the feature behind that.
Yeah, and that charms bar doesn't change.
Yeah.
It's the same throughout any app and any Windows 8 experience, whereas the app bars are contextual and they're specific to your app or if you're on the start screen to Windows 8.
Exactly, exactly. So next I want to talk about the built-in controls. So Windows, from a development standpoint, comes with a ton of different UI controls that you can leverage within your app. And they do a lot of really cool things from the perspective that they're built for touch, but also support mouse and keyboard. They support globalization, localization. They support a lot of the accessibility, or they do support the accessibility features that are built at Windows 8. So you get a lot of stuff for free with these built-in controls. As a designer, I will also want to understand that, so I want to understand and make sure that the things that I'm designing are things that the development team can actually, you know, implement.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at some of these built-in UI controls. So right out of the box, the built-in UI controls implement the Microsoft design style principles and personality. So all the touch features, the animation, all that stuff is just built in and you get that for free. And of course, you can style them to reflect your brand and to reflect, you know, the look and the feel of the rest of your app. But one of the things that's super, super cool about these controls is they are native to the language or the markup and language that you're actually developing the app on. So as an example of that, I've got an example here in a couple of slides. Here, let's look at all the different controls that I have available. So things like buttons. So here you can see an OK button and a submit button. One thing that's really cool is that button to the left, the back button that you see in the header. The hover state for that, the animation and all that, that's just styling that I get built in for free just by using the built-in controls. So that's an example of all those are buttons, but just by, you know, changing a few parameters or applying a style to a button, getting a lot of features. So checkboxes, combo boxes, date pickers, hyperlinks, and so on. Text input controls, there's some really cool things as far as a consistent experience for users, like a single line text box control, they'll all have a clear button, so users will kind of come to expect that feature, and it's built into the control, so it's easy for you to provide. Multi-line text box for long lists like we have in our recipes and so on. The password box has a reveal button. The rich text box has the ability to display rich text. Some kind of unexpected and really cool features that are built into the text editing controls. Mouse and keyboard, or text selection via mouse, keyboard, and touch built in. So there's an example of something that would be kind of complex to do if you were doing it on your own that's just built into the controls. So we all know how to take the mouse and click and drag to select some text. But if I just double tap on a word, it'll provide these little handles down there that you see under the word keynote, and then show a context menu. So it's really easy to have, you know, text within the app, and regardless of whether the user is using the keyboard and the mouse or using a touch screen, they're having a great experience. It's consistent with that touch experience across all of Windows 8, or with a mouse and keyboard across all Windows 8.
Exactly. And those handles for the text selection are pretty great.
They're
nice and large. You can grab them. They're super easy to use.
Yeah, absolutely. Cut, copy, and paste, another thing that's just built into the UI control. So if you select some text, it'll automatically show that menu.
Yep.
Something that's kind of unexpected and very cool, spell checking built into all the controls. So it's using the Windows 8 spell checker to see, you know, when I say here, hello, build attendees, you know, it's showing me different options that I can just tap on if I was in, you know, a touch environment. Text editing controls have tuning, so you can actually tell Windows 8 what kind of a keyboard to show. So if I'm just, you know, entering regular text, it's going to show me the default keyboard. But if I wanted to provide a text box for entering an email address, maybe I wanted to make it a little easier to hit the at symbol and, you know, type .com at the end. You can see on the left, I've specifically told Windows that, hey, this is a email, a text box for entering emails, and it shows the right keyboard. Same thing with phone number on the side, so I'm getting a specific keyboard for providing phone numbers. Again, this is just an attribute that you apply to, you know, the div tag for that particular control. Commanding surfaces like the app bar, the flyouts, the settings panes, the message dialogues, all those are built in. So the behavior of the animation, the light dismiss, the hover if I'm using a keyboard and mouse, they're all built in. I get all of those behaviors and that Windows 8 feel for free. For me, it's really just about styling and putting on the right commands and showing the commands based on, you know, the scenario. Is something selected? Is there multiple things selected? And so on. Data presentation controls. So list view showing a list of items, grid view like showing the grid of, you know, the what's new items within Contoso cookbook or all the news stories. A flip view for flipping through photos. All those are great example of controls that are about, you know, data presentation. You tell it what the items, how to style the items and what the structure of the items are, you know, in HTML and CSS or with XAML. You bind it to some data, and it automatically does, you know, the entrance animation, the flowing, the adaptive layout. And here's, as I mentioned earlier, here's an example of a XAML control, and the XAML that you would write to get that toggle control that you see throughout Windows 8. You just create a toggle switch tag, hook up an event behind it, so myToggle.toggled, and write some code, and it provides all the behavior. So the touch support, the mouse, the keyboard support.
It's just plug and chug.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, here's the same control in HTML where I've just got a div tag with a couple of attributes, data win control and data win options, and it automatically provides all those behaviors to my HTML control. Here's the app bar, just as an example, rather than me having to figure out how to create this app bar, the light dismiss feature, the hover, the touch support. I just create, you know, in XAML here, a new app bar control and put a grid in there with a stack panel with each of the buttons, then hook up some code behind it. All the Windows 8 behaviors are built in. Again, same thing with HTML. I'm just creating a new div tag and throwing a couple of buttons in there. The styling and all that stuff comes with it. Right, so a lot of these experiences are just built in. You just leverage them within your app. So the next thing I need to think about, now that I'm comfortable with all the different controls, is how do I design these different commanding surfaces to provide these experiences? And one great example that we'll talk about next is app bar design. So how do I design an intuitive and ergonomic app bar that provides the global and the contextual commands that I need to support all of my features without, again, littering the UI with a whole bunch of buttons for, hey, read more or, you know, pin and favorite this recipe.
Exactly. And that goes back to folks anticipating and expecting a certain experience in a Windows 8 app, but also carrying through that brand. So there's a little bit of usability that you're paying attention to, but also characteristic that you're paying attention to.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So here's an example of an app bar in IE10. The top app bar is for navigation. We talked about that earlier. The bottom app bar is an app bar specific to IE10. And again, people are going to install Windows 8 or buy, you know, a Surface device or a Yoga or whatever. They're going to interact with Windows, you know, over the first 5 minutes or so and understand where these app bars are and have confidence that they're there. So you want to provide a great design within your app. Users are going to expect a great app bar, and they're going to be selecting items and expect commands there and so on. So you want to design a great experience. So with the app bar design, where do I start? Well, of course I start with my user flows and my features. We had gone through the process of creating a great at statement, listing out all our user flows, all the features that support them. And I want to organize my commands to support those features. And think about, you know, what commands should appear throughout the entire app, so global commands. What should appear on specific pages, like maybe a section page to support filtering and sorting. What commands maybe should go on the app bar when I've selected an item? What should go on when I've selected multiple items? You know, have that contextual. What goes into the charms bar? And then create command sets and have those command sets displayed based on where I am in the app or what I'm doing on the app to support those user scenarios. So, command placement guidelines. There's a couple of things that I want to that you want to be thinking about when you're designing your app bars. And one is predictability. Throughout the app, you want to provide consistent placement of commands so users kind of get used to that muscle memory and that feeling of quality. If on one page, you know, the pin command is in one location and another page it's in another location, it can be kind of confusing, right? So, for example, add recipe is always that right-hand command. It's always there on every single page. So I know if they ever want to add a recipe, swipe up from the bottom and click add. They always know that where that's going to be. The next is ergonomics. Thinking about how users hold advice, placing things on the edges that's in easy reach of your thumbs, thinking about, you know, is this app a consumption app? Am I just like, you know, watching a movie or watching TV? Am I playing a game? Am I creating content using the keyboard a lot? Where do I put those commands? And then finally, aesthetics. So thinking about really clear command labels using the built-in Sago UI font, simplifying commands to reinforce the scenarios. All these things are going to create great app bars that are intuitive and a joy to use.
Yeah, going back to the things we talked about earlier today, folks use tablets, folks use laptops, folks use mobile devices in different ways. If you're passively watching a movie, you're maybe propped up on the couch and maybe you're not even holding the device.
Right.
If you're interacting with a text-heavy app, then perhaps you're holding it with your thumbs or you're holding it with one hand and typing with the other. And so thinking about all of those ways that people use their devices and how your app is most likely going to be used can come in real handy when you're designing app bars.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the first things that you want to think about when you're designing your app bars is what are the commands you're going to place to launch a scenario, like, you know, marking something as a favorite or pinning it to the start screen and so on. And Windows ships with a font called Sago UI Symbol. And all of the app bar commands that you see through, you know, the built-in apps and a lot of the custom apps are provided by this font. And they provide the glyphs for the app bars, automatically sized. They all scale. And they provide a lot of, well, a majority of the commands that you might need in your app. And they also have some common command glyphs that are intended to be common across a lot of apps, so your users don't have to learn what is the glyph for add. It's always going to be the plus. What's the glyph for remove? It's always going to be minus. Edit, pin, sort, and so on. If you use these particular glyphs within your app, users are just going to see them and automatically know what they mean. So that's really, really helpful. The fact that they're built into the font itself and they work across different DPIs and scaling is really helpful as well.
And it's something that your developer knows exactly what to grab. They understand when you place that command on the app bar in your design, they can just go grab it out of the Sago UI font symbol collection. And like you mentioned, it scales really beautifully. It's a font, and so it is rendering at the proper size and resolution at every instance.
Exactly. So let's look at an example of Contoso Cookbook. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go back to the app just for a second. Let me go to the home screen. And just call out a couple of app bars again. Because when we designed Contoso Cookbook, we really thought about what were the commands that we wanted available on every page, what commands made sense for a page, and then what commands made sense based on the context of an action that the user's taken, like selection. So everywhere in the app, we have a global app bar. The bottom app bar shows global commands. We have one, just add recipes. If I want to add a recipe to the My Recipes section, I would just tap on that command and be presented with a page where I could enter a recipe. The other is for navigation, which we covered in the navigation section, so being able to navigate around the app. But if I go into a particular cuisine, oops, I'm sorry, I accidentally tapped on one of them. So if I go into, let's say, Chinese, I can see all the different recipes here. Well, now I have the add recipe command, which is everywhere. And then I also have the sort command, right? And rather than having a button for, you know, sorting by A to Z and sorting by rating and sorting by prep time, uh-huh. I used a flyout to simplify the UI. So if I want to sort by rating, I just select that. If I want to sort by prep time, I just select that. And that gives me not only a really, really clear design, a very simple design, but I also have, via this flyout, more sophisticated commands behind that app bar button. And again, think about if I was holding, this is a very large device, but I was holding a Surface, I'm putting those commands at the edge, so they're always under my thumb, so they're always, the common commands are always within easy reach.
Yeah, and some of the considerations and decisions that we had to make when we chose that sorting command, for instance, was what do we want folks to be able to sort by? What's going to be frustrating if it's not there?
Yeah.
I think, you know, ratings and prep time are very important when you're choosing a recipe. And naturally, if you're sorting by rating, you probably want the highest rated recipe. And if you're sorting by prep time, then you probably want the lowest amount of time to start with. I don't know that folks necessarily aim for the recipe that takes the longest amount of time to prepare. But I think, you know, those are user experience decisions that you think through when you're building your app bars and things like that as well.
Yeah, and some of that came from information architecture, that we knew that rating was going to be really important and prep time was going to be really important, and then obviously sorting by name. But others of them were based on the scenarios, right? That, I mean, one of the scenarios was finding recipes. So what could we put on a recipe collection page like the Chinese page to help me, you know, even in this very simple scenario, just sort them based on what matters to me.
Exactly.
Maybe for more sophisticated data, maybe I'd have sorting and filtering, right?
Yep.
So narrow down the choices and then arrange the choices, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I go into Steam Bun Baos, I've got some commands that are specific to this particular recipe. So I've got, you know, favorites, mark it as a favorite or not, and then whether I want to pin it to the start page or add a photo, one of my own photos after I made this particular recipe, right? And then, again, we thought about what commands we were going to provide contextually throughout the app. So let's go back into the slides and kind of break this down piece by piece. So the first thing you want to think about are persistent commands or global commands. And where do you put those? Well, you put those on the app bar, always on the right. There's a couple like new add, or delete or remove that always go on the far right. And the reason why is if that's consistent across Windows 8 apps, again, users know that if they want to add some content or they want to remove some content, that it's always going to fall under that right thumb. It's always going to be available to them.
Yep.
And you want to provide these global commands always in the same place, so it becomes a predictable experience. People are confident that global commands are going to always show up in that lower right-hand corner within an easy swipe and tap.
Yeah.
Now, if I had more commands, you know, eventually that right-hand side is going to get cluttered. Like, you know, if I have two commands, great, three, four, eventually I get to the point where I couldn't reach all the commands with my thumb. And, you know, one of the things that I can do just from there is, thinking about ergonomics, move command sets and separate them to live on the edges.
Yep.
And then I've got my other thumb that I can swipe up and grab a command. And I always try and arrange them based on how often the commands are going to be used. Put the most prevalent and most used commands to the closest edge where they're available, and put the lesser used commands a little bit more on the inside, so users are taking their hands off of the edge of the device, you know, as few times as possible. So use the edges, again, for ergonomics. It balances out the app bar and puts all the commands within easy reach.
Yep.
Another thing that we recommend quite a bit is reducing clutter with flyouts and menus. And we went through an exercise where we designed, you know, some filtering. So we had different filters on, you know, show me just the recipes that had a rating of three or higher whisks, or show me, you know, the recipes that I can, you know, make within less than half an hour.
Yeah.
and so on. And there was one point I remember when we were kind of going through this, and I've had this happen on other apps I've designed, where all of a sudden there was 10 app bars across the bottom. And you can reduce a lot of clutter by using these flyouts. So rather than having three different sort buttons, and I tap on one to sort alphabetically and another one to sort by rating and another one to sort by prep time, just use that flyout. It's built in. It's really easy to do. So you can have that flyout available to remove a lot of the clutter. You just have one sort button, and people make a selection based on what sort option they're looking for.
And it's really familiar. It's a common behavior that folks look for
list
items.
Yeah. Next is hide disabled commands. And this isn't something that applied to Contoso Cookbook, but you'll see it a lot in Windows 8 apps where rather than showing, if there's 10 commands on the app bar and there's different view states that maybe three of them apply to one view state and another apply to another view state, rather than disabling them and showing them, kind of cluttering.
Ghosted
on the app bar, just go ahead and dismiss them and have them shown either by view or selection. And use that context to show the commands that are pertinent. And again, it's about clarity and it's about focus. It really helps your app bar be super, super simple. So when people swipe up, it's just super clear to them what they can do.
Right? Yeah, and one thing about putting content first is that you also want to, your users are so focused on that content that you want to keep the navigation really related to that content.
Yeah.
You also, you want to give them the chance to navigate away from that point with the top app bar.
Right.
You want to give them the chance to access those global commands, but they have made a very intentional decision, and so you want to provide them with the most contextual menu possible.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a great example about selection commands. So a selection command, if you think about it, is a very, very strong hint from the user as to what they want to do. When a user selects something, you want to show selection commands on the left, again, to make them easily reachable, right, via just swiping up and grabbing them with your thumb. You want to select them from position them from the inside left and push the other app bar commands inside, again, because the strong context of that selection. And if you look at like even the app bar here the start screen, I have the global command for all apps if I want to see all the apps, right? If I go and select an item, I place all those commands on the left. The user has told me I am working with this item. Right, you want to make those commands super available to them, and it's a stronger intention of the user rather than just having. If I had some page specific commands here, like in, Contoso Cookbook, I have this command here for adding a recipe. When I select an item, I put those on the left. If I had other items in here, like filtering or sorting or other page specific commands, I'd slide those into the inside because under this context of an item being selected, they're less important.
Yep.
Okay, so for selection commands, put them on the left within easy reach and put them on the far left and push the other app bar commands inside to match that strong context of selection. Okay. So that is UI elements. So what do I need to know when I'm designing a Windows 8 app? Well, first is content before Chrome. So I want to put the content and the controls that are core scenarios directly on the page. And everywhere else, I want to look for a way to provide those other features, either moving them off to the charms, the charm bar for share and selection and settings. We're going to talk about that first thing tomorrow. But in other ways, provide those features through direct manipulation or through selection. So like for favorites, why don't I just go ahead and select that item rather than putting a favorite button on every single recipe, just have users select that item and show it on an app bar. So understanding the different transient UIs like flyouts and app bars and message dialogues and so on gives me a good feel for all the different places I can put controls and all the other different ways I can surface those features without cluttering up my UI with tons and tons of buttons and checkboxes and stuff like
that. Yeah, it's really refreshing to, and somewhat of a challenge in its own right, to design content for content's sake alone. We all have had to plan for every social network that has come out that has trended. Okay, now we need to make sure that they can share to this new social network. And so you have to find a home for that little tiny icon along with the rest of them.
Yeah.
This really, it's a refreshing way to get all of those tiny buttons and commands that you just have to tuck somewhere off of the screen and really focus on the content itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And the built-in controls that we had talked about, they provide a whole host of different features. So, you know, the touch support, the ability to be styled to reflect your brand, built-in accessibility and globalization features, as well as just the Windows personality. So the animation, like the list view control, animating in content to tell you that, hey, the content, you know, starts from the left and goes to the right for, you know, a horizontal pan. Mm-hmm. A lot of these, you know, Windows 8 look and features and feel are built directly into the controls.
Yep.
So the thing that you want to do is think about the canvas first. Think about what you can do with direct manipulation and selection. Think about these different command surfaces like app bars and design them for predictability and ergonomics. Show them on demand and show them in a way that's consistent and intuitive for your users. And once you do that, you're going to have a UI where not only does the content and the features really, really shine, but all those other features are still available to your users. And just from them knowing about Windows 8 and using Windows 8 for a few minutes, they're going to know how to use the app bar and how to use the charms to get out all those other features they expect.
Exactly.
Awesome. Okay, so that's UI elements. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and we're going to come back and talk about what tiles and
snapping
and scaling.
Yeah.
So how do we create a UI that looks awesome, whether it's on, you know, a 10-inch screen, a 14-inch screen, or even like a 24-inch screen like this?
Yep. So. It's going to be awesome.
Awesome. We'll see you soon.